Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer. Chris, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right here in my little closet, which feels all the more appropriate every day. We have another guest who's in a closet today too. Divya Tagtashian, and how are you?
Hello. Hello from my closet.
Hey.
I'm doing well.
Good. It sounds good, though. I feel like podcasting quality for everybody is just going to skyrocket in these home times.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Everyone's investing in like good audio tech.
Yeah. So. I tried to order a new webcam and it was like, I got this email that's like, the company has failed to ship this product to you. It was like, you can't even get your hands on a good webcam. I had one. I just wanted a really good one, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and forecast a 95% chance two kids will run in here and ask for printouts from the printer. So I just want to forecast that for listeners at home. Mm-hmm. There's going to be an invasion here. So
people you might know Divya from you know, a couple of different things. You're at Netlify, right?
Yep. That is where I am.
Devin it up.
Never heard of it. Never heard.
We're a small startup.
What's Netlify? What's a Netlify? Is that the?
It's like Netflix, but not Netflix.
Netflix for websites.
Netflix for websites. It's like, I think one of the phrases I tried to get people to adopt, I think it was like, what was it? It's like Netflix and chill. It was like Netlify and chill. But I think there are so many connotations to that that it was quickly shot down. So
yeah, I can't see the actual company embracing it, but as a side joke, I think it works. Dave was just joking, of course, because a lot of us, you know, use, love Netlify already. It's a web host. I feel like I mean I can let Divya do this, but I think I'd tear up just a little bit. And largely for static files. Mm-hmm. I mean, although I think even from day one, the message has been like, but don't let that, you know, don't let that get into your brain too deeply. Like, yep. Static files is great for a million reasons, but it doesn't mean that this thing is only for like Jekyll sites. It's great for Jekyll sites, but it can do a lot more.
Yeah.
And Netlify themselves came up with the word Jamstack. It wasn't like Jamstack and then Netlify's like, I know, we'll make a hosting company around that.
Yeah, it's been around. It's just a matter of like naming the thing, right? Like, people have been doing a thing for a while, and then someone's like, this is what you all are doing. And you're like, cool. And I think that helped a lot, because with Netlify, they were trying to push like this whole concept of static site deployments. And alongside that, mm-hmm. the architecture, like you were mentioning, of building sites. So it's not just static or Jekyll sites. It's building statically and then adding dynamic elements to it with serverless functions and so on. And so the Jamstack sort of encapsulates that, because it's not only really nice for overall like making your site super fast and secure, but it's also really nice for like overall developer ergonomics, because you can now deal with things in isolation rather than have this giant monolithic application and have things break and then your entire site doesn't work. And I think that's like...
Back in my day, we called it Bluehost, and you'd FTP CRUD up to Bluehost or whatever, which is fine if you're using Bluehost. But I feel like Netlify in particular has like some innovation there, because it's like, I don't just FTP it. I send it actually up to GitHub, and then Netlify hooks into my GitHub and then pulls it, like does some checks and tries to build the thing I just pushed. And then it'll tell me how well I did that. And then it'll deploy the site for me instantly. I didn't even have to I just had to do like responsible version control, and now my site's updating on the web.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the beauty of it, because oftentimes, like, I mean, I'm primarily a front-end developer and I really hate having to do a lot of DevOps-y things. And so in the past, it would be, oh, I need to containerize my front-end and then I need to put it on some kind of hosting provider or something like that. There's a lot of steps to it. And then you would just never touch it. You would just be like, well, I'm just going to hope nothing breaks, because if things break, I don't know how to fix it, or I'll spend like an entire day trying to fix it. And with Git, mm-hmm. we're already version controlling things. And so it's a workflow that's fairly streamlined. You're not actually doing anything else. You're just hooking your deploy pipeline directly into Git. And so Git, like that's automatically handled for you. Netlify does all the work. And all you're doing is just version controlling, really. And then you just automatically get that nice deployment cycle going for you. So without having to do
any
work.
Isn't that clutch? Like, yeah. Netlify's been doing this for years. And as soon as it existed, you look around to me, and I don't know if Netlify's like the first thing deployment thing to hook into Git. Surely not. But like one that really like captured the hearts and minds of the people in a way. Now I look around all the entire hosting landscape. I'm like, how can you possibly offer hosting that isn't like a first class citizen hooked up to my Git workflow?
Oh, definitely. Like, yeah, I think I remember.
Wild.
Yeah, I remember having to do all that myself. Like I had a site set up in like, I think 2014 or something. And I had it such that it did every time I pushed to Git, it would auto deploy. But I had to build that, and it took me forever to build that cycle. And it was just like, again, the same thing, like from a DevOpsy thing. It was like, if that thing breaks, I have no idea why. And I'm just like, I would be very upset if I had to fix that. But with Netlify, it's just like, it's probably not going to break. And if it breaks, that's probably on Netlify, not on me. And so, yeah, that just cognitive load of automatically being able to deploy and ship applications without having to think about that is it's huge.
Yeah. We've talked about Jamstack a bunch of times on this show, so I think people are largely familiar. And that there's nothing you can't do on it either. I like to, I don't know, think about that sometimes because it's kind of fun. You know, like there's just because it's some static files, there's literally no limitation to that. It's not an architecture that says, well, that's good for X, Y, and Z and not good for 1, 2, and 3. Not really. It might be that there's not, you know, I overheard a conversation the other day about like community forums. And it was like, well, I want to build community forums. Can I do that on the Jamstack? And the answer is you absolutely can. Yes. But I'd say there's way more off the shelf choices for not Jamstack. So yeah. You have choices to make, you know?
Yeah.
Build the thing yourself or get spammed into oblivion or use an off the shelf.
Right.
Those are your choices.
Oblivion is right. As a matter of fact, I, you know, after whatever, 11, 12 years of having forums on CSS Tricks, I closed them because I was like, I can't dedicate time to this anymore. Spam was kind of a problem, but that might have been solvable. But I was just like, mentally, I'm a little checked out of this after all that time. So I kind of ended up spinning them down a little bit. And I did note that, you know, like Netlify yourselves uses Discourse for the forums there. So it's like even companies that are like obviously highly invested in Jamstack sometimes make other choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Building it would take a long time anyway. And just like, I mean, the thing is, that is a really great solution. So what we're trying to do is push people towards that specific Discourse. Like a lot of companies generally use Discourse for forums because it's a really great solution for just making sure that everything works. You can easily answer questions. You can manage users and so on. And so for people who are community managers, it's like the UI is easy to understand and easy to set up. And so they can focus on the community rather than like all the bits and bobs that comes with like a DIY solution. I think one of the things that I often hear about the Jamstack, and I've had to field a lot of questions, is this whole the focus of the Jamstack, or a lot of the conversation tends to be around developers. And I talk about that too, because I'm a developer. But it's interesting because when you build a website, developers aren't the only ones involved in that process. You have people who are content authors or people who are just not technical who might be contributing in some way. And there are times when you think purely technical in the Jamstack, when you're like, oh, people have to use Git in order and write content in Markdown, and it's very developer-centric, where it's like it automatically raises the barrier to entry for other people because then now they have to learn Git and Markdown. And so I think the general thought is that I think when people talk about the Jamstack, they talk about these different models which are developer-focused. And I try to shift the conversation into thinking more about how do we create the Jamstack that's more inclusive for everyone rather than for just developers? Because there are solutions where, like, for instance, if you think about it from a content perspective, CMSs are really heavy, but they give you so much functionality that a lot of headless options might not do. So, like, a lot of headless, like, sort of Git-based CMSs, I would say, generally have a workflow that's not as robust as you would have if you used WordPress, let's say. Like WordPress gives you plugins, it gives you all these things that allow content authors to manage their layouts and do a lot of configuration that with like, if you were to do Jamstack strictly as like a developer focused approach, it kind of removes that control from them because they automatically are like, well, I'm just creating content and the developers are the one who have full control over, or I need them to do all the work if it comes to changing layout or whatever that is. And I think you can actually change that so that by picking certain tools that take those non-technical people into consideration, you can still have a Jamstack approach that's like, makes developers happy, but also people who are not necessarily technical also happy. And like, I think, so with the Jamstack, there's generally this like, with CMSs particularly, there's Git-based and API-based CMSs.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about that a lot. I'm like, you can choose whatever you want. It doesn't matter. And I think the more I use either of them, the more I lean towards API-based CMSs. And the reason for that is it's really frustrating when your content is tied to the overall like developer cycle of things, because now you're automatically blocked with, because your PRs and everything are put alongside code PRs. And that's really frustrating because then it just creates these roadblocks. And so people who want to just create content now can't do it liberally. They have to wait for the PR to be approved and then someone merges it and there's this whole process. But if it's API based, they can just be like, whatever, I'm just going to add content really like as they need. And then anytime the site is like requested, it just pulls from the API and refreshes the content.
Oh, I had just an example. I had a client, you know, built out like a static site generator, Jekyll, for, or maybe it was 11D at some point, but for their content. And then, yeah, it was like, oh, you want this uploaded? Oh, that's a change request.
Yeah.
Like we have to do you have to file a change request that goes through DevOps, that goes through, you know, with the networking team, you know, and it was just like, oh man, really just was fixing a typo.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I've seen that happen. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't use Git-based CMSs because I think they're great for, let's say you have fewer contributors and like, let's say documentation, for instance, that's a fine use, it's a fine use case for using a Git-based CMS because I imagine, one, you're not making a lot of changes, and two, a lot of the people making changes like generally understand the deployment and development cycle. And so that's fine. And the same with like personal blogs. If you're like the only one contributing to it, then a Git-based CMS is fine, more or less. But I think when you add more people to the team and there's people who are not necessarily familiar with the development cycle who don't want to be blocked, then you might have to think about whether a Git-based CMS is worth the effort because it automatically makes it more frustrating to work with.
It's early days for them anyway, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's true, I mean, like, too, yeah.
It's just like there's not, those things need to grow up. I use two different ones. So like I'm a fan because I think it opens up some cool possibilities. Here's one, by the way, that I think quote unquote traditional or any other kind of CMS has no good solution for, which is like just totally open public contributions, which I know is Netlify worked on a idea, but you know, we're so used to that as developers because of things like pull requests. Pull requests are already beautifully fleshed out as a concept in the world of developers anyway. And so if your content lives somewhere that's in Git anyway, essentially you can offer a pull request for that content and then you can build a UI around it that isn't so gross, that doesn't look like a pull request to the person doing the pull request.
Oh, definitely.
And that's so cool. That's so cool. WordPress can't do that. I'm like a WordPress lover. I love it. And you can't do that, you know?
Yeah, I think I think Netlify calls it open authoring and like, a lot of other CMSs, Git-based CMSs, are using this. And that is one huge benefit to it because, like you said, you automatically can take contributions from external people who are not part of the org because of the flow of how pull request works and forking and so on. And so behind the scenes, great. You're essentially just like allowing forking the repo, creating a pull request to the main repo. And the person, you can create a UI around it so the person who's adding the content doesn't even know that. So that is definitely one benefit to using the Git-based CMS that like API-based CMSs doesn't have. And I don't think, I imagine it would be really hard to do that with API-based CMSs.
You got to be happy with where you keep your data. Because I think whatever your individual circumstances is, if you zoom out from that and look at the world and how they tend to operate, you're not going to port your data. You're just not. You're going to rebuild your front end 10 times for every time you actually move where your data is. So just make sure you're really happy with where your data is. And I totally agree. API-based CMSs feel great. And I feel happy about that because it could be a WordPress site. Because you still have to host it somewhere, making that part of your stack not particularly Jamstacky. But it offers an API, so you could do that. But of course, the ones that are always talked about in Netlify circles are ones like Sanity, which is so cool for choosing how you model out your data, and they host it for you. So it's an API you hit still. And of course, the big players that everybody's heard of, like Contentful, do good there. And you've totally decoupled, and your front end becomes this playground. You can just totally tear down your front end and build it in some other way without having to port your data. And gosh, is that cool. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by AWS Amplify. You know AWS, right? Amazon Web Services. It powers most of the internet, it feels like. There's a ton of things that go in the AWS bucket, like EC2 allows you to spin up servers of your choice and has all kinds of configuration. And S3 is for file storage, and Lambdas is for running cloud functions, all kinds of stuff that individually you can set up and use and are great. But there's so much more than that. There's a ton of different things AWS does. AWS Amplify is kind of a package of tools to help you build full stack apps for the web. So it's like, I don't know, just give me the stuff that I need that usually you need to build an app. So Amplify is hosting. You need web hosting, it's got that. It's got authentication for logins for your users. It's got GraphQL as a first-class citizen of it. It's got serverless functions, like I need, the Lambda thing. I want to run some code in the cloud to hit APIs and do whatever else I need to. And it's got file storage if you need it. It's got some machine learning stuff in there if you need it. So Amplify is this easy to use full stack framework for getting started quick with building web apps. Is really cool. The auth stuff alone is cool. It's just a few lines of code in there. GraphQL has taken over the world of how to get things from a database, put things back in a database, really front end development friendly way to do database stuff. Love GraphQL. It's just built in as a first class citizen. It's the scalable API. You don't have to provision your own servers. It just does it up for you. Pretty cool. So AWS Amplify is really cool. Definitely worth checking out, especially as a front-end developer. So check all that out. Let's rapid fire. There's so many questions, and this is a softball for you because I'm going to take these questions from you because you did this is another thing I know about. You did this 2 years ago or something on your own blog where you just went on a bender of blogging. I feel like that's your style. You blog crazy and then you just stop for a minute. So this latest round was all, I don't know if you did it on your own blog too, but I'm looking at, dev.2. Do they just call it dev? Is it just dev?
I think it's called dev. Yeah.
Which is cool. It's a great site. Community oriented thing. And there's all of your latest blogging super story was there. Jamuary.
Yes, Jamuary. Yep.
And so if you had to answer, I'm going to answer the questions that are the title of your blog post, but you have to answer them really quickly in 15 seconds. Okay.
All right. Let's try it.
Can an SPA be Jamstack?
Yes.
A single page app.
You hesitated there. Okay. Keep going.
Do I have to is it a single word answer as well? Or do I just be like...
I like the single word, but also a tiny bit of elaboration. Is
okay, yeah. It can be as long as you're statically rendering some parts of it. Mm.
Okay.
Can a site be too large for the Jamstack?
This one is... I think it depends was my answer for this one because...
Oh, we're going to get the sad trombone sound effect.
It depends because, for instance, the larger your site is, the longer it takes to build, especially if you're building it statically. And so for a lot of people, that can take a lot of work when it comes to optimizing the build or even just having to deal with a couple hours to build a site. And for some people, that's a deal breaker. And that's the reason why they don't choose to go the static approach. There are ways that you can optimize for your site that's super large to be Jamstack. So you're just like managing the cache a little better. So your build isn't super fast. Super slow, I mean. Your build is fast, not super slow. So you're not building every single page. You're only building the ones that change. But there, it is a content.
Does that work? Can you, who facilitates that?
So the thing is, so one of the things that we're adding to Netlify is we're adding this potential, it's called build plugins, and that's like, we've been hinting at it, and I think we had a initial like private beta for a while, and we're going to release it soon.
I got excited too early. I made like a whole thing around it, and then I'm like, I think the vibe was like, just wait, it's not really ready.
We are changing it quite a lot. I mean, within the DevEx team itself, we're like, we're ready and we built a bunch of plugins. And then they're like, we changed the API. And we're like, cool, we need to update everything. Which is like, I think that happens with like quick feature changes and so on. But the build plugins will give you access to how Netlify builds your site, which also gives you access to the cache. And so you can sort of manage what's in the cache and change what's in the cache if you want to within like through a build plugin. So that gives you a lot of functionality. Fancy. Yeah, it's fancy because previously it's kind of a black box.
Where the question goes, let's say you have a 100,000 page site. 100,000 pages is going to take a hot minute to render in anything. You know,
for
maybe
sure,
Levity
yeah.
can do it fairly quickly, but it depends. You know, it depends on what work it has to do and how many functions it's running and stuff. Well, let's say it took you like 10 minutes. That'd be pretty freaking slow but it could be even worse than that. And I'm sure it gets, you know, I'm sure there's sites that are much bigger than that, you know? Then the question is like, are we looking at long builds, long deploys, yada, or what, you know? And you already talked about it because like maybe you just break one page of that cache. Maybe you just deploy that one page. Maybe you just rebuild that one page. But it feels like early days. Like nobody's saying
it is
like,
very early days.
Just do that out of the box.
Yeah, I think it's really early days with that, especially because with a lot of Jamstack and static site deployments, I can speak just how Netlify works, is that you automatically invalidate the cache every time you deploy. And that's like, it can get, as you said, very heavy, because if you invalidate the cache for like a 10,000 page site, it's going to take 10 minutes or more for the entire site to rebuild, because we're just essentially building that 10,000 pages, each individual one. So I think, Jamstack is like maturing a lot. So you see a lot of e-commerce adoption. But I think in general, we are tackling a lot of the challenges that come with building large sites on the Jamstack.
That would be the same problem with a forum if you built it that way. You'd be like, every single comment is going to be an individual page. That's going to get big real quick. Anyway, related, is server-side rendering or SSR, is that like the same thing as Jamstack or?
No. I'm very adamant against, so I know this is like a very hot take. I feel very afraid to
good.
Say this.
Yes, spice. The spicy takes.
But so Zeit has released a lot of articles talking about serverless server-side rendering, and I call it's just a bunch of hogwash to me, because the whole concept of server-side rendering is dynamic rendering, essentially, if you think about it. Like, you're dynamically rendering every time someone requests the page. And so that is inherently not statically rendered. You can't call it statically rendered. Because the whole point of the Jamstack is you're moving away from dynamically rendered pages. And that automatically gives you the benefits like speed and security and so on. And if you're doing server-side rendering, whatever. That's like completely antithetical to this whole concept of static rendering. Also, I think a lot of problems.
So it's still like pre-rendered. It's like still like an HTML file or whatever. But like in SSR, the way we're defining it here is that like there's still some back-end language that's like spinning up in which to spit that thing out.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Like, okay. You should.
It's a hot take for sure, because I know that there's a lot of contention in the Jamstack space around what or whether SSR is considered Jamstack. And so like Netlify's take is definitely not like that. That's not like if you want to do it, you can do parts of your site using SSR, but like just know that that's going to add time to your site.
Even Netlify offers SSR because Lambda can spit out a static, not a static, a Lambda can return HTML.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I would actually rephrase that in that we don't encourage it, but we offer you the ability to do it. So it's sort of like if you want to, you can shoot yourself in the foot. But we do not the way we market that is slightly different. So Zite has also similar like serverless functions. And for them, they essentially push the whole like SSR dynamic forward because they're like serverless functions allow you to do SSR at the edge, which like I would argue a lot of, so again, when it comes to edge and like serverless functions at edge, not a lot of companies do that at the moment. So like Cloudflare has edge workers and then Lambda has at edge, but a lot of people doing serverless functions today are not doing it at the edge. So even though your static sites are loaded from the CDN, which are edge nodes, the serverless functions are still origin server. So like you don't get the benefit.
I deal with that regularly because we're like, I guess, you know, it's a cool Lambda, but it's still like US West 3 or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think people forget that. They just automatically assume everything is edge and you're like, no.
Yeah, it just gets complicated, right? Because you can put it behind. In our Brian LaRue episode, he was talking about this and how it does get complicated because the way they serve their app, they use Lambdas even to serve otherwise static stuff, and the Lambda runs once, generates the static thing, which goes into CloudFront somehow, and then the Lambda never gets touched again. So technically, it's barely SSR. Like one time it was SSR, and then it's cached from then on out, which feels a little closer to Jamstack to me.
Definitely, I think that would be closer to Jamstack than like SSR for every request kind of thing, because that's not super.
But I get the appeal of that approach too, because if you have a server back there, then it's like, oh cool, I can check a JWT, or I can there's all this stuff you can do that can't on the Jamstack.
So actually the interesting thing is the other thing I've been thinking about a lot is the future of Jamstack. Like, okay, as we've been mentioning, the Jamstack is growing in maturity, but there's a lot of things that are still trying to be like a lot of infrastructure that isn't fully fleshed out yet or is still being developed. And one of the things is just the ability for what we can do at the edge. I think that's still, we're still like in the early stages of pushing the boundaries of what edge can do. But I'm excited to see where that goes, because for now, certain things you can do at edge, like with Netlify, you can do redirects at the edge, because that's edge logic that happens automatically, so you could just redirect without having to go to the origin server to redirect. Authentication can sometimes happen at the edge as well. And so it's just figuring out or build. I think it's interesting and really fascinating to see what companies are coming up with in terms of what you can do at the edge and what logic they give you access to.
Amen. I could see that being a big deal for the future.
For sure, because I think that automatically pushes the boundary of what Jamstack is, because I think Jamstack for a long time in its infancy was, people are really focused on the technology of like, okay, JavaScript API markup, whatever. And I think at this point, we're starting to see with the infrastructure changes and developments that you can do so much more. Like, so in the early days, it was like fairly static. You could do some dynamic stuff, but not super dynamic stuff. And then I think as the ecosystem emerged and microservices grew, you could do a lot more dynamic stuff, but you're still like pinging other APIs and so on. And so I think it'll be cool to see like what you can do on the CDN that you currently are on and you're serving from, and like, what does that give you access to, and what will that give you access to? And then what would that open the possibilities for?
Yeah, it seems incredible to me. Yeah, you can. It's this new like layer of the stack that you're like, wait, what? You know, because it's kind of like a web worker in a way, but a web worker has to run on your client. But it's like, it's not. You don't have to run it on your client. You can run it before the client.
Like, yeah, what? I think one of the things that, for instance, like I'll just talk about the limitation of Jamstack, which is something that comes up a lot, that you can't do. you can't do like WebSockets, for instance, like well on the Jamstack or anything that's like PubSub style things. Because everything needs to happen through webhooks. So like an event happens and then it pings Netlify directly, and then Netlify is like, oh, okay, cool. Or like another service, and they're like, oh, okay, cool, I need to rebuild. And so I think what would be really cool is this ability for like, okay, like let's say you have edge nodes, and like the edge nodes have a sense of like what APIs you're connected to, and when content changes, it's like listening for content changes. So the content doesn't have to ping it. It just automatically is like, oh, the content changed, update. That would be cool. I don't know if we like, it's just like things that
if you need that now, you just like, you just do it in JavaScript, right?
You're essentially.
I just don't pre-render that part. That's just not pre-rendered. I just,
no, you wouldn't pre-render you because if something is updating that frequently, exactly. Yeah. You just hydrate every time or something.
Okay. Yeah, well, I agree. That's going to be some future stuff happening there. What's up with like Jamstack plus WordPress? Like, is there any good story there? What's the story?
Yeah, I think it's growing a lot. So WordPress has had like the API to get content for like a while, I think. Like they've had a REST API for a while. But I think they've started talking more about the static approach in the last, again, like I'm not super in the WordPress community, so I feel really bad about just being like, only recently they found the Jamstack, but it seems that way to me.
Like, until recently.
Yes. They found,
I think I've heard like Gatsby is kind of like, as a consumer of WordPress, is kind of beginning to take off, I guess.
Yeah. I think Gatsby has been spending a lot of effort and time to create resources that will help the WordPress community like migrate towards a Jamstack solution. Obviously, theirs is very Gatsby-centric, so you would essentially might be migrating migrating WordPress towards Gatsby specifically, creating a solution where your content's on WordPress and your site is in Gatsby. So that's like a very, it is Jamstacky, but it's like very not technology agnostic. But it is helping that community, because I think it is giving them a sense of like, oh, okay, static approaches exist. Jamstack is a thing. And I've seen a lot of people start talking about it. So there's a podcast called That's My Jamstack. And I think it's really good. They talk a lot about like Jamstack approaches and so on. And I listened to an episode from last year. And so there's a guy by the name of Daniel Olson. He's building a thing called Shifter, which is like static. It's like a static site generator for WordPress, which I didn't think was a thing. And then I heard the podcast and I was like, oh, that's cool. So it's not actually using WordPress as an API. It's essentially just using WordPress as is, and then you have this build pipeline that just takes your WordPress and spits out.
Well, that's a big deal pages. Because it's like if you just use the API, then you're on your own to rebuild the front end. You're not
exactly
using the heart of WordPress. Which
no,
is all
you're not
these,
using
like,
the themes and the plugins. And yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah, so
that's
was
pretty
cool.
Interesting. But what's funny about that is that, you know, there's been plugins for ages. Like, what's the biggest caching plugin on WordPress? I forget what it's called.
Total Cache.
Probably that one, W3 Total Cache or whatever, which I used for ages, but it seems like these days hosts want to be your cache instead of that for some reason, which I guess makes sense because you can do a lot from the like Nginx layer and stuff like that and CDN layer. But anyway, how that one worked was, you know, the page was requested and it literally made a file called like that page.html. And then when there was requested again, it would just get that HTML file and serve that instead of asking PHP and asking MySQL and running all that stuff, which is cool, which is kind of Jamstacky.
Yeah, it's it like, is.
But I think it like was smart enough to know that not everything can be done like that, so that it would, I don't know if it hydrated per se, but it knew when to invalidate cache, and I don't know, obviously it was complicated technologically, otherwise everybody would have just built their own plugin like this. So kind of curious. I don't know what to do, because I'm in that position where I'm like, I love WordPress. The authoring experience in there, I got dialed in perfectly for me. I use all this stuff. Like, I'm playing around now with some e-commerce stuff in there with WooCommerce, and it's just like easy and it's just great. It just works beautifully, you know? But I'm like, I'm obviously attracted to the Jamstack. I've bought a bunch of other sites on the Jamstack. I like the dev experience. I like the speed. I like the security. I like everything about that. So it just seems to me there's got to be a future in combining these things, these big industry players, you know?
Yep. Yeah, because I think every time I talk to people who are in like big CMS communities, whether that be WordPress or Drupal, that is one thing. They're like, you're so committed to that framework and that all that comes with it, because it gives you so much power and control over how exactly you want things to work, plugins, whatever. And also the thing is, like, going back to my previous point, people who are like building a site and don't want to get into code or whatever, they can easily build a site using WordPress without having to touch like a line of PHP if they want. And it works and it's great. But then automatically when you're like, oh, I can, you should move to the Jamstack where it's like secure or whatever, whatever. It's like, essentially, they lose a lot of that control, because you're like, well, you can use WordPress for your content, but you have to build everything else yourself. And then that's like, it takes away from the complete joy of using WordPress, which people are so like committed to, or just like completely, that's like the thing that they're very comfortable with. And so I think it would be cool to see more solutions. I think Shifter is one. I think Stratic is another as well, which essentially is trying to build a way of allowing people to continue to use WordPress statically, is generating static sites, static pages from that itself. So that would be cool to see how that plays out and if that increases overall adoption within that community.
I think there's a spectrum of all the way from, oh, this site's going to be pretty easy, to this site's going to be like, it's going to be incredibly difficult, you know? And I'm not on the incredibly difficult scale, but I'm pretty close. I'm like pretty high up there, to the point where it doesn't compel me like immediately to just be like, I'm going to drop everything and do that. And the other funny thing is, like, for the industry at large, that like you still need a WordPress instance somewhere then. And you're probably paying for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's true. Like, yeah.
So it's like, you're not like saving any money. In fact, it's probably going to cost you more money to run the stack in this way. And it's like, well, I'll just run WordPress locally or something. Like, oh, maybe, but that's not exactly the point, you know? The point is
less moving parts, which might be nice. But
hey, Shop Talk listeners, this show is brought to you in part by CodePen. That's me, your host, Chris, co-founder of CodePen also. Sometimes I like to sponsor our own show and tell you about CodePen. It's a freemium app, so you can use CodePen for free, but I hope to compel you with the features of CodePen Pro. One reason you might upgrade is just because you like this show. That's fine with me. I'll take your support that way. But ideally, there's some part of Pro that makes you want to upgrade. You know, one of the like little things you get with Pro is that you get unlimited embed themes. So you might like build something on CodePen in which to then use somewhere else, like use in a blog post or documentation or whatever. It's nice because you change your theme and then it changes on every single embed where you use that theme. Of course, that's very important to me, unlike CSS Tricks, for example, where I might want to change the look of the embed because we're redesigning the site, or just want to freshen things up or something and have that theme change over the entire site. So, of course, I do that. If you need several, a bunch of themes, just go Pro and you have unlimited of them, which is cool. Just one of a dozen or more features you get for upgrading to Pro on CodePen.
I think, you know, what surprised me, we've talked a lot about blogs, but, you know, and I can hear people saying like, well, Jamstack, that's fine for small sites and personal projects, you know, that bummer who shows up in the Twitter. But, you know, I think what I was surprised from Jamstack Conf in that Chris and I went to last year, that there's even like e-commerce is starting to happen on the Jamstack, and then you like bail out to like a big commerce checkout flow, or like a Shopify checkout flow. Like you just like, you do all the data bits or all the user experience. And then the point where you take a credit card, you just have to go visit the big server.
You know what? Another thing then, like that, these used to be an advertiser on CSS Tricks like ages ago, like 8 years ago. It was called Foxy Cart. It's called Foxy.io now. But the whole point of it was e-commerce that you just like, they just host basically like a JavaScript powered cart. And then eventually like a kind of an iframed modal checkout kind of thing. So you can do whatever you want CMS wise with your products, you know, like manage your products and your prices and your pages and just build whatever you want. And then the moment you actually need to buy the darn thing, you just, you know, you click a little button that adds it to their little checkout flow and go from there. And the whole point, I used to do it on WordPress sites, which had its own e-commerce solution, but I liked the idea that you could take this and you could plop it on top of any CMS. And I bet it's particularly Jamstack friendly now that I'm thinking about it.
Probably. Anyway. I think they get compared to like Snipcart, because Snipcart, I think, offers a very similar approach where it's it's like a drop-in e-commerce solution for creating shops and things like that.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. It seems like why not? Isn't that part of the spirit of Jamstack? It seemed like it is to me a little bit that you get to piece together services. You're like, I'm going to pick this service for this. I'm going to do my forms over here. Like my API is going to be powered by this and my e-commerce will be this.
Kind of like no code for developers. Or like, I guess no code is for developers too, but most I see it in design context a lot, but yeah, you're just like, oh, I want that thing.
We already do that anyway. Whatever you build, you're like, I'm going to use this for my error tracking, and I'm going to use this for my analytics solution. I'm going to
bootstrap.
Yep.
Always bootstrap.
This is fun. Let's see. Is there any more hot take questions we can do there? So why is the Jamstack fast?
Well, the Jamstack is fast mainly because of the way that it is architected. So instead of dynamically rendering your site, you're statically serving them. And so the site is already pre-built. And so instead of every time someone requests your site, they have to, like, the servers need to go do work and then give you a thing, it automatically has the page available and it gives it to you. So that's super fast. The other thing is that the infrastructure makes it faster. So because if your site is, like, let's say it's statically pre-rendered, you're having it on an origin server, like some EC2 bucket or whatever, S3 bucket. You still need to go to the origin server to get the page and back. And so there's this thing called latency that happens. So it's like the further you are from the server, the longer it takes. And it's limited by the speed of light. So you can't really increase that. And so with the Jamstack, generally you're serving directly from a CDN. And so the CDN makes it much faster because the CDN is different from the origin server. Origin server is like, it'll be dependent on where you are. So you'd pick like Virginia or wherever else servers are. And with CDNs, generally, there's this concept of edge servers. So it's different from an origin server because an origin server has the ability to churn like dynamic thing. So it runs like JavaScript or whatever you want to throw at it. It can churn and do that logic. An edge node is not as highly functional, but it is closer to the user. So I'm in Chicago, so there's an edge node probably somewhere here. And if I'm requesting a page that's statically rendered, I can just grab it from wherever the Chicago node is. And so instead of going all the way to Virginia, it just gets it from Chicago. So it's much faster. The latency is automatically reduced. And so that makes it much faster overall.
Just two things. It's not only statically rendered, but it's hosted on an edge nodes.
Yeah, that's the other part. Yep.
And does Google care about that? Is that a benefit? I mean, we know that they factor in speed at least a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think they factor that in. I think I hear a lot of the SEO thing. So I've always had arguments with people about SEO. Because they're like, well, even if your site is dynamically rendered, Google can run JavaScript, so whatever, SEO doesn't matter. But I think you do get benefits from statically rendering your content because now the bots just automatically know what your site is. And so the crawlers don't have to do a lot of work. And for me, that's a benefit. But I don't, like, of course, like crawlers and SEO bots are much more highly functional than they were like 20 years ago when people were actually putting HTML on servers. And so, yeah, but there is, I would argue there is a benefit from an SEO perspective. Obviously, that's like a ongoing argument with people who are like, well, I can still SSR and get SEO benefits, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think the only fact I know for sure, because I saw it in like a video from Google, says that if there's literally no content on the page when we first crawl it, and we know that JavaScript's going to run and the content's there, then we're not going to ding you, but it does go into a queue in which that it's a week-ish long queue. So a week for your first pass and a week every time you change it. So that seems like a lot. Like, it doesn't hurt your SEO. It's just slow SEO.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just generally a benefit when you statically render it for SEO, unless you're willing to wait a week, which is...
I bet they factor it in. How can they not factor it in? This probably. Page is just right there, ready to rock and roll. Be
yeah, dang. Probably. They probably take in Lighthouse into consideration or something, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, so that's a lot of Jamstack stuff. You're also interested and involved in Vue and stuff. Like, how does something like that, like a JavaScript framework like Vue, what does that have anything to do with the Jamstack?
So there's, going back to your question on whether spas are Jamstack, there are ways that you can statically render a single page app like one that's built with Vue. And so you can do that with various things. There's like prerender.io. There's also a pre-render spa plugin that I sometimes use that essentially will run through my Vue site and then spit out some static pages, which are really nice. So I don't have to do a lot of work. It can still be like, blah, 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 I can use Vue. And I think, so part of it is I really like Vue and I'm really invested in that ecosystem and framework. And so for me, it's just trying to find ways that the two can work together. I think also the approach that, oh, if you want to be Jamstack, you have to be completely static and you can't use frameworks is pretty divisive, especially if we want people to build in this particular way. We can't just automatically be like, no, you can't use your framework that you really like anymore. You have to build like vanilla JavaScript or whatever. And so I think the Jamstack doesn't discriminate between whether you use vanilla JavaScript or a single page app. I think the whole focus is like, okay, if you built a site in React or in Vue, statically, like figure out a way so you can statically render it. And there are lots of ways you can do that. I can't speak to React because I haven't done it in a while. But
well,
Vue,
we already talked about Gatsby, which is 100% React. And
exactly, yeah.
They can do it.
So I think I'm talking more about like create React app. But so within frameworks, there are also like static site generators. So Vue has a couple. There's like Vue Press, which is specifically for doc sites. And then there's also Gridsome, which is more for like blogs or whatever you want to use. So Gridsome is sort of Vue's solution to not having a Gatsby. It's like the Gatsby equivalent. And so that's one way to do like static site generation stuff with Vue. So you have the functionality of like doing anything, like having all of Vue and then being able to static render. But you also have the, similar to Gatsby, have all the GraphQL and all the extra like niceties that comes with that whole framework.
And ViewPress is the thing you see like whenever you've been to any Vue website's documentation, it's just using ViewPress.
Yeah.
Always. Right?
Yeah. And Netlify.
Every single one.
And Netlify. Netlify docs are also in ViewPress, actually. That was a huge win. Oh, yeah. Cool. That was really fun. Yeah.
I get a chuckle when I go to like a new JavaScript framework and it's just in ViewPress.
It's like they didn't even attempt to change the theming. It's just like
ViewPress. Yeah, it's just the great. Just the default. And then Nuxt is like the next.
Yeah, and Nuxt is like the next level.
Your build your own application kind of from scratch.
Exactly. Sort of, well, Nuxt is sort of, I don't even know if this is the fair equivalent, but it has a very similar architecture to Rails in that it scaffolds things for you.
I called it Rails for Vue. And I don't know if that's a compliment or people like take that as a compliment, but it has similar ergonomics.
For sure. It's interesting because have you heard of Redwood.js? It's the new framework.
That's what I was going to talk about next because I'm like, look at this stack of technology. How can that be Jamstack?
I
don't even get it yet.
So I was on, I mean, they. So just to end the previous point, the thing that Tom Preston Warner, he calls Redwood.js the Rails for JavaScript. And I was like, I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult. Because he's like, we don't have a Rails equivalent in the JavaScript world. And I was like, I don't know if people liked Rails and we wanted that in our community.
Oh, they totally do. I like Rails. Dave likes Rails.
I want Rails. I don't want Bundler. I love the people who worked on Bundler, but it had a few rough goes. And then just like NPM is.
That's
and
fair,
will,
yeah.
But yeah.
Well, NPM is part of GitHub now, so.
That's what I think of. The point of Rails is you could be like, I want auth. I want this error handler thing. I want this cool plugin that does tags good. You know, that's not here. Redwood.js is too new for that.
Yeah, so the thing with Redwood that I was actually on a podcast with him on JS Party, and so we talked a little bit about that, because even if you look at Redwood.js, they call it full stack for Jamstack, and I think I question that a little bit, because I'm like, isn't Jamstack not full stack? And I think the point he was making was that it just, so the common argument or the common criticism for the Jamstack is that you have to pick and choose. Some people really enjoy that, but some people are like, I just want a site really fast. I don't want the whole like having to decide what e-commerce solution I want, what auth solution I want, and all of this, like having to build all that. It's like, you're not building, granted, the logic around it, but you have to make all those decisions, which is a lot. And so I think Redwood directly addresses that you're building a site and then all of these are just decided for you and you're just building with that infrastructure in mind.
Yeah, it's saying use Prisma, and Prisma is like an online database thing.
Exactly,
so it's saying,
yeah.
Okay, there's data involved then, and Redwood is saying, if you're going to access that data, you're going to do it through GraphQL. Okay,
yep.
Thanks. If you're going to build a front end, you're going to do it through React. And it's saying, we're not even going to say that. We're going to say you have to use our style of React component. And that component is highly based around how it goes and gets data. And so every component is going to say, well, it can be in one of these states then, which is, you know, error or fetching or success or all these things.
I liked that part of it. But that's just me.
Yeah,
oh,
it's really nice for that, because you don't have to decide. And I think it addresses the people who are just fatigued by having to make decisions but still want to use Jamstack. So it directly addresses their pain points. But again, like Redwood is just, it's super new. And so I think they have a lot more, like it needs to develop a lot more. Like it's still not super mature. I know they're advocating for using it, and they're like, use it in everything. And you're like, it's not mature yet. I don't really want to dig in super deep.
I think that's fair, but also the tools that it's built from are mature, you know?
That's true, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Prisma, but what is like, the thing that, what's great, the final juice? What's the magic juice that turns all those technology and then makes it Jamstack friendly? Does it pre-render or what?
I don't actually know under the hood what it does. I think it pre-renders some aspects of it, probably the front end piece. Yeah, so
here,
the,
I'll just search,
yeah,
so the docs for juice. no docs found.
Well, so I'm going to say this thing is ready for Jamstack. It's got to do something.
Yeah, so I think the front end components, like the web components and everything, are pre-rendered and put on a CDN. And then all the other pieces, like the databases, the GraphQL, the three third-party APIs are all exposed through a GraphQL endpoint using serverless functions. And I think that's how it works. And they also call it like edge ready. So it's like ready to be. So I think
that's
your
thing,
like,
that you poked at earlier. It like the lambdas are doing the heavy lifting here in a way. So it's not it's not doing the Gatsby thing where they like are pre-making all these files. It doesn't look like it's doing that yet, although it could be wrong.
Yeah, I think Gatsby like essentially pulls the APIs and pulls everything and then gives you static pages. And so this is sort of different because it's not doing that. It's not pre-rendering every single page. It's not pre-rendering the pages with the content in it. It's still like available as a serverless function and then
hydrating
it.
They're rolling the dice. They're saying that's not necessary. That lambdas are so good and so fast and so cacheable that we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. Who's going to win, Gatsby or Redwood, it seems.
One has a giant investor behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They both do, though, don't they?
They both do. Yeah, they both do. That's true. Yeah.
And I have invested quite a bit.
I know Zach Leatherman is looking for, he's looking for a $5 to $8 million seed round.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I do like, I didn't know, maybe it's news. Well, what's funny is I went camping on spring break and then come back and there's like 8 messages I feel like in like the Shop Talk Twitter, like, you need to talk to Redwood and get like, you need to. And I just was like, well, I guess another JavaScript thing was born. And you should, you know, while I was camping. And then, but knowing Tom Preston Warner's like involved,
he's so willing to talk. So we got him on JS Party, which I was amazed that we did. And then we talked to him for a bit and he was like, I'm happy to talk to anyone about Redwood. I think he's like trying to send stickers to whoever.
He must be on that kick because we got him too, but not for like another 6 weeks or something. But yeah, we're not as cool as you. Got him right away.
I know. I think we've been hounding him for a while. We've been like, can we talk to you? I think because he's been talking about Redwood for a while. And so I didn't, but K-Ball did. He jumped on that. And he was like, let's try to see if we can get him on the show. And Jared was also, they're both like very on the ball.
On the ball. Nice. I get it.
Hey, no, I didn't know it had like a form helper, which is actually excellent. That it would sell me on this.
You don't need that.
To be honest, like, I love form helpers.
A different, like a, not a helper, like process your forms, but like a.
No, like a Rails style. You. Like labels, inputs, and errors.
And you know, errors?
Ooh. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I just said errors, and everyone said, oh. That's exactly. Yeah. Isn't that just, God, we are just a broken species. it handles errors, and everyone goes, ooh. Oh, my God. I'm checking it out.
Very important. Type yours. Yes.
Well, I guess we kind of maybe need to wrap up here, especially because my neighbors are mowing, and that's always good for audio. But cool. I guess what's if you could forecast like 1, 2, 3 years out, what is Jamstack in the next, like, should we be moving or what's your forecast?
I think it's like, as I was saying before, it's going to mature a lot more, and so we're going to see as edge nodes get more logic, and as you can do more on the edge, you'll see a lot more functionality. And I think we'll also move away from Jamstack being like JavaScript API markup specifically, and more into like this whole way of building things at the edge. Because I'm actually almost invested in this. I've drunk all the Kool-Aid, but it's very much the more. You see a lot of this with Cloudflare workers, and Netlify is also building stuff at the edge and so on. But that would give people so much more they can do. Your sites can remain fast. You still get a lot of flexibility in terms of that. The other thing that will, I think, also start happening is that you'll see a lot more frameworks similar to Redwood that are like full stack Jamstack. Where it decides things for you so you don't have to make those decisions yourself. Because I do think that that is something that creates a lot of hesitation for people who want to get on the Jamstack, that they have to make all these decisions and so on. And then the next thing also is that we'll hear more about various migration patterns of how people move to the Jamstack. Because I think, generally speaking, we don't hear a lot of that. You don't hear a lot of people being like, I have this giant monolithic application and then I migrated to Jamstack. There's very few of those. And so I think we'll start seeing more of those and like more solutions around how we can do that in an organic manner. That's just how I see it. It's a very optimistic look at the future.
Well, that's a nice place to wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Divya, for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
They can follow me on Twitter. I go by ShortDiv, and that's probably the best way to contact me.
Awesome. And you mentioned it, but JS Party, you're a frequent host on that.
Definitely. I'm also on JS Party very frequently as a panelist. It's a podcast I really love and enjoy being on. So you should definitely listen to that.
My favorite episodes are the Yep Nope episodes.
Oh, those are great.
Are forced to argue both sides of some hot drama. So those are really great. Check those out. And thank you, dear listener, for downloading this. in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I'm server-side rendering result, choptalkshow.com.